As many of you know, I was at the minister's convocation in Adrian, and it takes place at Siena Heights University. If any of you have been there, it's, Don and Nancy, I mean, I know you have. We were talking about a nun who is there at Siena Heights, a dear friend of yours. And we have worship, we have lectures, we have food, and there are so many opportunities to enjoy free time, the beauty of the forests, the land, the campus around Siena Heights. It's a place where we can meditate. They have several beautiful chapels, some rather small, some just large, ancient, modern. It's all there. You can choose. And there is a labyrinth on the grounds, so you can walk around the labyrinth. They also have, and I've walked around this too, because I just like to do this, a cemetery. And I love cemeteries because you can see interesting things on the markers. You know, I told you I was sick, things like that. While these convocations are designed for continuing education, the relaxed setting, the afternoon free time, it helps ministers post-Easter to not only be resurrected, so to speak, or resuscitated is another word. I'll stop there. Just to be rather than to do. And you, I think, know what I'm talking about. Just being rather than doing all the time. Because clergy get especially, but other vocations too. What am I saying? They are caught up in doing this and doing that, thinking about where we have been or where we're supposed to be going rather than focusing on where we actually are. This is similar to other vocations, whether it's forestry or whether it's teaching, all nursing, all of these professions are mired down in this drive for success or to climb the ladder. And baby boomers like myself, while part of this American dream, we recognize, therefore, the many gifts that are offered by Eastern religions. And there's a wonderful book I have on my bookshelf, and we have talked about it in a book club I attend. It's called Living Buddha, Living Christ. Now, I'm going to try to say his name again, Thich Nhat Hanh. Did I say that? Thank you. He's a Vietnamese monk, and attentiveness is taught, as well as the walking meditation. And this includes, if you can imagine, in a walking meditation, it's first, it's the heel, and then the arch, and then the baby toe, all the way to the big toe. And then you do it again. And it's called peace with every step. I'm using my hand. You do not want to see my foot. You do not. I am reminded of the Buddhists who were leading a seminar at the Parliament of World Religions at the Palmer House Hotel in Chicago in 1993. And during one of the religious gatherings, I could not take my eyes off a Buddhist monk who was drinking a glass of water. And it took this monk 5 minutes. I was timing him to sip once from that cup. Just the way he was doing it, savoring the water, drinking it. You could see it go down. Nothing was in the water. Robin. But no, I don't know. All right. Oh, it's Chicago water. Okay, well, but it took him a while. But it's just the way he was. I didn't hear the speaker, but I was watching him do this. And at first it was irritating, and then you get into it. as you just watch him do this. I walk back to my sister's home, which is on the north side of Chicago, on Michigan Ave. And as I was walking, I couldn't get this image out of my mind. And all the seminars that day and workshops, etc., that's the only one I really could remember. It was right there inside of me, and I couldn't get it out of my head until I stopped and got a cup of coffee. And then I drank my coffee and kept going, and then I woke up to the world. But that image keeps coming back, and maybe the coffee was a sort of protest. Back to the labyrinth, though, I did walk the labyrinth there at the Weber Center. We had devotions every morning. It was too early for those devotions, for me at least. But every evening we had worship, social time. And on Wednesday night, during a communion service, a young minister from southern Michigan had us facing each other in the chapel. And then he stepped aside and he said, "Okay, now you're going to all meet as partners, you know, like do-si-do, and share communion." So he just moved aside and let us do it for ourselves. And then as we were doing it, he just kept talking about Noah's Ark. And he said, "Why is it, you know, with Noah's Ark, why is it that you, the animals, they all go on two by two? Why is it two by two?" Well, they're partners, you see. And so as we were, naturally, we just kind of hooked up, you know, our arms were like this, and all, we would go. It was really an interesting way of doing communion, and I just loved it. And of course, the way we do it, we're one full circle too. It's called the love circle, so we have that as well. I was thinking that the Noah's Ark, there isn't, we were talking about this last night, I think. There's a Noah's Ark in Kentucky. Isn't there a big Noah's Ark there? But I'm not sure if you know, but there's a big sign on that ark that says, "No animals allowed." Do you know that? It's kind of funny. Think about that. I like to be a thorn in people's sides periodically. And so I was asking the other ministers there at the convocation whether or not if they allowed the lay people in the congregations to lead communion while the ministers sat in the pews, and not one clergy person. They gave me wild looks as if, "Why would you do something like that? That's crazy." And I said, "Well, we have people who lead communion. In fact, right, Robin? You've led communion. We have Penny." Am I going to get in trouble for this? Anyway, it seems to me that everybody ought to be invited to share communion, all of us. And then I said to the other ministers who were gathered there, "Why is it that ministers keep all of these holy things to themselves? Why is that? We're just a bunch of control freaks, think, or we hide behind our robes and our ordinations, our hotshot degrees." But I don't know. I just thought that this should be opened up to everybody. I think it's important that everybody share the holy things. It doesn't have to do with my sermon, but I got off track there. You can cut that out if you want. In fact, you better, because if it's out there on the internet, the World Wide Web, it could be trouble for River City here. Thich Nhat Hanh relates the Buddha and the Christ. What they did was they savored walking around outside and inside, moving from one place to another and all points in between. They walked the hills, the fields of India and of Israel. And regarding Islam, one of the five pillars, it's called the walking pilgrimage to Mecca, where Muslims dress in a white cloth that many will use later on for their own shrouds. And they walk counterclockwise 7 times around the ancient Kaaba in the center courtyard of the Great Mosque. And it's said that the oldest among them would be happy to die before they are through, returning to God just as clean as when they were born into the world. And since the Great Mosque cannot accommodate all of these Muslims, it's done throughout the year. But unfortunately, there are so many walkers that often frail men and women and children are trampled to death in the walk if there are too many. While Jerusalem is Islam's third holiest city for Jews and Christians, it's the number one. If you go to the great city, you'll see Jewish Orthodox leaders who are against the wall, and they stand in one place and bow down low. And when I was at in 83 with the Ecumenical Institute, I visited the Church of the Holy Sepulchre and recall a group of Christians who were approaching the church carrying a wooden cross. And I just watched them, and they were really struggling with it. And I thought, we're tourists, they're pilgrims. They're actually participating in it. And then you think about actual participation, actually getting down on your stomachs, actually doing these types of things, how difficult it is for us in Western society. Jesus, he walked a lot. And not only during the last week of his life, but the four Gospels, they relate stories of Jesus walking in the countryside, walking by the Sea of Galilee, walking in the temple, walking on water, and walking. It gave Jesus time to observe and relate equally to the Syrophoenician woman at the well. He walked to the tree where Zacchaeus was, and he shared earth parables, as we heard from our beautiful choir members talking about Earth Day. Even at his death and afterwards, he walked with the others on the road to Emmaus. So if Jesus, I think if he had moved more quickly to reach people, maybe this all would have been a blur to him, because he was moving so slowly and deliberately. They came into focus for him, and Jesus came into focus for them. Sometimes he had a destination, and sometimes it was the journey. That was the destination. And for many who followed him around, Jesus was their destination. Whether he was going somewhere or nowhere at all, it was the going, it was the moving, the walking that was the point. Jesus probably walked in sandals, but I believe he also walked in his bare feet. Following the command that God gave to Moses after Moses turned aside from tending the sheep to investigate that burning bush that was not consumed, and God said, "Remove the sandals from your feet, for the place you are standing, it's holy ground." So the flesh comes to the earth and breaks the ground. This groundbreaking activity, getting those shoes and socks off tired feet, and letting them curl up in the earth, it provides all of us with a sense of the sacred and the divine. It's the ground of all being. Catherine and I were talking about how to receive our new members today, and I said, "I know, I'll just get some dirt and just kind of throw that at them." And she said, "Don't do that." So I didn't do that. David Steindl-Rast, who was at this conference I attended in Chicago, he said this: "The spiritual practice of going barefoot can take us halfway around the world and wake us up to our own place. It can lead us to love God with our whole selves and our neighbor as ourselves without leaving our backyard. And when we do this, we begin to teach ourselves what we truly need to live. As long as we are on the earth and we know it, we are there and where we are supposed to be. We have everything we need to ground ourselves in God." So, how does all of this relate to us in Cadillac? Now, it's the 49th anniversary of Earth Day. It's today, the 22nd. And Rachel Carson, she wrote a book, a landmark book, Silent Spring, it's back in 1962, which sounded the alarm about the hazards of chemical pesticides. With oil spills and DDT poisons and fires on the Cuyahoga River, it didn't take long for our country to wake up to these environmental issues on land and sea and air. In my soil stewardship manual, there's this explanation. On April 22nd, 1970, Earth Day was established as a way of exploring every means to preserve this planet from the destruction of pollution, poverty, abuse, blight, neglect, and greed, instituting recycling projects and tree planting exercises and fuel efficiencies and regulations on corporations with abusive practices like dumping chemical contaminants into waters and streams. Because we had discovered through 100 years of industrialization that breaking the ground was beginning to break us. We wanted to preserve this world for our children, their children, and all future generations. The fire that burned in Ohio went out. The eerie waters of Lake Erie began to shine, and we all began to see that we are temporary tenants of God's green earth and not owners at all. And so this grinding, grounding work continues as we look to the earth and how we find how our lives depend on each other and on walking all over the earth. And by walking on this grand green earth barefoot, we can become more aware of how God may be more likely to speak directly to us, because for once we are giving our full attention, body, mind, and spirit to the ground of all being. Like that Buddhist meditation, we walk as if our lives depended on it, placing our heels before our toes and getting a sense of just how much pressure we place on the earth that feeds us, houses us, gives us life. The rivers and streams and woodlands, the valleys and hills and all the gardens of the world, they give us life. As we press down on these things, can we feel them pressing back upon us? They have been around so long, much longer than we have. And if you think about it, we're the new beings on the block. Consider the birds of the air, Jesus said. Consider the lilies of the field, Jesus repeated. Consider the earth and the wind and the water and the air and how they feed us. Therefore, we must preserve, conserve, and nurture in the sacred place we call our home, because we have no other. Amen.